Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are. With Dan Z, the podcast you're looking for. This is... Yes.
Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
You've got your notebook handy, right? This was the book cover that I was alluding to in the last segment. You got that right. You got that down.
I do.
It is very cool. It is very, very cool. Although I did love the original that will be the general release with Thrawn and Vader on the cover, which is an interesting juxtaposition.
Nice little juxtaposition. There you go. Good work. Yeah. Jinx. Juxtaposition jinx.
Did we really jinx ourselves with the word juxtaposition?
Yeah, that's the kind of cerebral highbrow stuff you'll have on Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Vanessa Marshall, Harrison Dula from Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Juxtaposition jinx, indeed. Hello, everybody, and welcome to show number 132 of Coffee with Kenobi. You are at your favorite coffee shop with your friends talking Star Wars. It's going to be spoiler-free, and hopefully it's going to make you think about Star Wars in a whole new way. I'm your host, Dan Z, drinking One Nation Coffee out of a Galactic Nights coffee mug purchased in April 2017 from Disney's Hollywood Studios. On today's show, we have Tom Gross and Jay Krebs joining us as we continue our solo breakdown of these characters from Solo, A Star Wars Story. We took a break last week to talk more about Galactic Nights with Jim Hill, and Tom and I caught up, but now we're back, and we're going to talk about Kira, who, for my money, is the most fascinating character in Solo, A Star Wars Story. So pull up a chair, grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Less than 2 weeks to go before we get to Comic-Con, and I will be broadcasting live from Tops at San Diego Comic-Con, located in the Lucasfilm Pavilion at booth 2913-R. And I am so excited. Be sure to come by and say hello. Lots of giveaways, lots of opportunities, and we'll get a chance to talk with you about Solo, The Last Jedi, whatever is on your mind when we're at Comic-Con together.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
Joining us today for a cup of coffee is CWK newsman Tom Gross.
Hello, it's great to be on tonight.
Yes, it is. It's great to have you on for the entire show, Tom. And we also have with us the co-host of Starships, Sabers, and Scoundrels, as well as a CWK blogger, Jay Krebs.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Dan. Thanks so much for asking me to be on. This is really exciting. And I'm honored to be talking about Kira this evening.
Yes, we are very excited to talk about Kira. Last week, we did not have a solo character breakdown because we had Jim Hill on, and we spent most of the show talking about Galaxy's Edge and Tom and I catching up. We are back in the swing of things, and we're going to talk a lot about Kira. For my money, she is the most interesting and complex character in this film, and she deserves her own show. And I'm really, really looking forward to talking about this character with the both of you. So any overall thoughts on Kira before we really get started?
Well, I will jump in, I guess. For me, I appreciate the fact that there are a lot of blanks to fill in yet. And I like that about characters that we're getting in terms of the fact that, you know, it's not all the cards, not all the Sabacc cards are being laid on the table, so to speak, that we get a chance to learn about them and to see some of their background, but yet also have that little, you know, carrot dangling in front of us to where we definitely want to learn more. And this is a character I definitely want to learn more about.
I completely agree. And one thing that I wanted to say about Kira, and I'm so excited, Dan, that you invited me to be on this show tonight to talk about Kira, is I think she is probably the most important character that's the least amount talked about. And so I feel like she's just, I don't want to say she's a forgotten character, but boy, we need to talk more about her connections, first of all, to Han Solo, but then the shocker at the end. Whoa, what is that all about? Mm-hmm. And she goes off on her own. So much. I think there's so much to talk about with her.
She's very nuanced, much more so than any of the other characters in this film, as I just stated a few moments ago. She has an interesting rise to power that, as you said, Jay, we don't really know much about. We do have the novel that came out the day the Solo premiered
that ventures into her background with, well, basically the forming of her relationship with Han and how the two of them are competing to be the number one for the White Worm. Have either of you read that book?
I have. I loved it. Most Wanted by Ray Carson. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yeah, it's really fun. I really like it.
It's not only is it fun, but it really does give you more of a glimpse behind the curtain of her character, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And some of her motivations, her way of thinking, her personality. And, you know, she's not only motivated, but she still has a little bit of that naivete about her as well. Mm. That kind of trusting nature, I think, in the book that, of course, you know, perhaps becomes a little bit more jaded later on, as I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, that was a great book.
Yeah, I'm glad you've read that. Let's talk a little bit about that book as far as the beginning of it. It shows a particular scene. We won't spoil the book for you, but it does show a particular scene that kind of kicks off the events, kind of the inciting incident. But they show it from two different perspectives. They show it from Han's perspective, and they show it from Kira's perspective. And at the beginning of that book, they don't have any kind of bond at all, besides the fact that they're one of the few humans that are with the White Worm. Mm-hmm. And as you said, we see some naivete, but we also see this very acute sense of survival. Like, she does not come across as someone who is fragile or easily broken. She mm-hmm. she has fear. She's very anxious about what happens because she knows that she could either be blasted or the White Worm would be angry. But she still pushes through that fear. And I think we see the results of that later in Solo, but definitely laying the groundwork for more complexity.
Mm-hmm. Tom, have you read that book?
No, I have not read the book. And there are a couple things that you've said that I want to ask and kind of learn more about from the book without maybe the details. Mm-hmm. We've said that she's a smart person. And then we've also said that she has a sense of survival. Mm-hmm. Is one of those, are those two together, or does one create a sense of the other? Do you know what I mean? Like, her sense of survival, is that in the book what makes her seem very smart and makes decisions the way she does? Or is it the other way?
I guess it's a little bit trickier to answer, which is why I like Kira so much. And one thing I noticed when I saw the film for the first time is it presents this very, very Dickinsonian, Charles Dickens thing where you've got the poor lower class that are being run by some sort of a warlord or an overlord, really, that controls people. So that sense of survival is just sort of intuitive because it's either that or become a victim or stop breathing, really. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a little bit of that there. Jay, what were you going to say?
Well, that's definitely a really great point in terms of the survival instinct. I think a lot of it was, you know, you're so ingrained, as you said, with that fight, flight, or freeze mechanism. And for Kira, I think in the book, and again, without giving away any spoilers, I feel like she had a lot of series of aha moments along the way that, you know, she had different experiences that exposed her to different things that she had never seen before and had never experienced before. And it kind of opened her eyes to not only the fact that there's a whole galaxy full of opportunity out there, but yet she also has her own ability to create her own destiny. And I think that was a very empowering thing for her in the book.
I do too. And again, I think it's just so important and prescient to note that when she finds herself in situations, what she naturally does is she looks for the escape routes and how will she handle things if A happens and I'm going to do B, or if A happens, I might try B or C. And she runs that process through that she can come across as very poised. They give her, or the White Worm gives her this outfit to make her seem more like she's going to fit in with the upper class at the beginning of the book. And I really like her reaction to that, to the clothing. And Jay, it's even more astute that you're on because you do reviews for Coffee with Kenobi, of course. So I'm sure you're taken by that moment as well.
Definitely. And not only the fact that the colors that she was, you know, able to wear and the styles that she was able to wear, but the perfume as well, which she realizes later why she was so perfumed. But yeah, even the jewelry, everything, you know, as she goes along was, you know, I could talk about her fashion all episode, but I won't.
Oh, hey, go ahead. This is a good time.
We want that.
Tom wants to as well. And if he was talking about cosplaying and he wished he knew how to sew because his older daughter loves Kira.
Oh, that is so great.
Oh, yeah. She loves, in fact, Dan, for our listeners, they've already heard this, but just to share, one of my daughter's favorite parts about Kira is that wicked, awesome ponytail that she has.
Oh, right. I agree.
Loves that. And I said, you know what? It's funny you say that because I noticed it too. And if I noticed it, then it must have been a pretty special ponytail. But, you know, I think it, to me, what it shows, and I can't wait to hear what your thought is. And we've totally derailed from talking about the book, but when she puts that ponytail in, to me, that shows business.
Mm-hmm.
That's
funny.
What you take from that?
When you say that, there's some memes out there that say, they say when a girl tightens her ponytail, you know, stuff's about to go down. So yeah, there's
I'll have to take your word for that since I don't have a ponytail and I don't have a daughter.
That's a good one. I love it. Well, you know, I got to tell you, there's some really great, inexpensive Kira-inspired cosplay jewelry out there if she's interested in that on a website called Olove. So yeah, it's really great way to maybe get her started in some fun little, you know, costume jewelry and maybe some cosplay some Kira at the same time.
Before we end this segment, we can transition from the book a little bit. Although I do think again that we can maybe have a more detailed analysis of it as we progress over the next couple of months as we're looking more closely at Cello. But let's look at her character at the beginning of the film. And I mean, of course, relationship with Han. I think one of our segments will just talk about her relationship with Han. But what strikes you about Kira as we meet her at the beginning of this movie?
Well, she's, of course, you know, a teenager right along with Han at this point. And she's obviously in the same boat as he is in terms of being part of the White Worms and a scrum rat and, you know, the whole nine yards. And obviously has a history with Han. You get that sense right from the beginning. But also that she admires him for his kind of sense of bad boyishness, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And you do get the sense that she would follow him anywhere.
Oh, definitely. That was one of the things that I got was, first of all, how well they played along with each other's act. When he hands her the, is it the coaxium in that, and she knows exactly what to do. And they played well together, and I got the exact same sense that she's on board. He's her ticket out now. Whether it's through because it's survival, and she knows that, or whether it's because she truly has feelings for him, I'm not 100% sold on either one of those. But that's part of who she is. You know, she's as you mentioned, she's a survivor, and so. You know, I thought I wasn't 100% sure that it was just Han that she was leaving for. She was leaving for something better. And if Han is a part of that, awesome. But
oh, interesting and sort of deliciously cynical, too.
And well, you know, and I think I get that from when she tells him to go, you know, when they're, you know, when they're carrying her off, she's sending him, you know, that's the dream. And so you got to go and you got to do that.
She didn't want him to be killed as she explains later, much later, you know, 3 years later at Dryden's. Mm-hmm. But see, I think that's cool. Are you looking at that through the lens of knowing what happens at the end of the movie? Or did you really feel that the first time you saw it as far as the first time?
I felt that in the first part, but I also, you know, I have to say, I think she really enjoyed Han's companionship. With all that said, and one of my favorite moments is when Han makes that blunder. It's not a blunder, but yeah, it is a blunder. When he goes through two short alleyway, and they make it almost to the end, and it's like she looks at him like she's been there before. This is Han.
Really?
Han just does this kind of stuff, and you know, but it's in like a loving kind of way.
Interesting. Well, this is a good place to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to pick up this conversation and we'll see what Jay thinks about that. And I will certainly share my thoughts on Cured the first 10 minutes as well, because it's a little bit different than Tom's perspective, which, again, I think is wonderful, because the more different opinions we have, the more we can learn more about these characters and ourselves. So let's take our first break. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Download top Star Wars card trader to collect your favorite Star Wars characters and trade with fans around the galaxy. Don't forget to stop by the Topps booth in Lucasfilm Pavilion to take your photo in a life-size trading card and find out how to win autographed photos by posting your photos to social media. This week for Patreon, we have our CWK pour over, and we had, as I've talked about on previous shows, the funniest conversation to me that I've ever recorded on Coffee with Kenobi, whether it be the pour over or the regular show, which has been going on for over 5 years. Corey brought up the idea of what kind of snacks do you like to enjoy when you're watching a movie, and just went into places I did not expect, and I laughed so hard I practically snorted. So I highly recommend that you listen to that, and the way that you listen to that is to be a Patreon contributor. Speaking of Patreon contributors, I'd like to thank Ben Elkington, Rebecca Raven, Terry Lee, Dennis Keithley, Lieutenant Law, Aaron Harris, Chris Skavarka, Angela Sauce, Mediocre Jedi, Christo Hayding, Chris Metz, LJ Souter, Thea Selby, Jeff Ellis, Daz Davies, Christian Dale, Jason Hall, Brian McKinney, Connie Shee, Mike Audette, Jared Cantor, BJ Smith, Eric Struthers, Nick Deco, and Mark Suter. Those are our Patreon contributors, and they are part of something where for $5 or more a month, they get access to our CWK pour over, which now has 13 shows and has a couple of movie reviews on it as well that are not Star Wars related. Myself, Tom Gross, and Corey Club talk about all kinds of different geek topics, Star Wars, comic books, movies, entertainment, and we dig into our personal lives a little bit, but all in a fun way. It's a nice escape from reality, and we're also very, very candid about our beliefs. And we are on this show too, but we try to tackle things we wouldn't necessarily talk about on the main show. We have a tremendous amount of fun putting the show together, and we hope that you will enjoy it as much as we do recording it. But Patreon doesn't only have the CWK pour over for $5 more a month. For a dollar or more a month, you get access to Lens, which is behind-the-scenes stuff, video and photo. And when I go to Comic-Con, I'll be doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, so you can look forward to that as well. You can also get t-shirts, coffee mugs, phone cases, and actually have an opportunity to host the regular show with me 4 times in 1 month. So please check out www.patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can find a link on our show notes and the top of our webpage as well to find out about how you can be a member of our CWK family. One Nation Coffee is the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi. 4 lifelong friends had this idea that grew into some of the best coffee you will ever going to have. They have subscription services, they have merchandise, but most importantly, they have the best coffee in the galaxy. Be sure to go to www.onenationcoffee.com to order the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi today.
We are back, and we were just talking about Tom's opinion of Kira at the beginning of this movie, and with an understandable kind of one eye open on her and one eye open on maybe what is motivating her, and she is coming from a place of survival, which we understand. But Jay, how do you respond to what Tom said before about Kira and maybe sort of what is her feelings towards not necessarily Han, but just sort of getting out of Corellia?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do agree with you, Tom, in a lot of aspects. And going into Solo for the very first viewing, I am a big one about trying to stay away from, you know, any kind of spoilers and anything that's not officially released. And even if it is officially released, I'll still try to stay away from it a little bit. But
well around here, then that's good.
Oh yeah, you know. Right. But and of course, you know, there was that part of me that had to mentally and emotionally prepare myself to see Han with a woman who wasn't Leia. So there was that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's not in my mind at all.
You know, well, and then, and of course,
this is,
you know,
before he meets her.
Exactly. And there's a part of me that understands that we all have, you know, a past, and we all have people that we might have been with before the person that we end up marrying and becoming the love of our lives or whatever. But it really seemed like the two of them, as you said, Tom, she just got it with Han. It's almost like they had this unspoken dance with each other. and yeah. that she got him, you know what I mean? But yet, you know, there was also that survival instinct that, and again, she gets the survival to tell him, you know, go, just go. She would figure out a way to get back to him somehow, or she would figure out a way to get away and maybe find him, maybe not. But yeah, those are my first impressions.
I kind of like that it's something of a twist on the traditional, the archetypal damsel in distress thing, where at the end, you know, she is the one who is captured and taken away, and he's screaming, but she's saying to him, you know, go, run away. She's not screaming help or anything like that. She's like, no, get out of here. But I took that as complete selflessness on her part. In fact, I think we've got two things going on here at once. We've got a very unique situation where survival and becomes a part of bonding. You know, the fact that they both had to fight tooth and nail to survive, or even to get a good, reasonable meal three times a day. I mean, that's unlikely. They'd be happy to get one once a day. So that brings them together. Plus, they're teenagers with most likely not a lot of experience in the ways of love before they met each other, although that could come out later. At this point in this recording, it has not. So you've got the survival thing and the fact that they're teenagers. And so they want to get away. And I think she's so, you can tell there's like a lot of fire and anger there. And she says, no, you know, we'll never have to answer to anyone ever again. And they're racing out. And then of course they both get captured and they don't miss a beat. I don't think for 1 minute she would step around him. I think she wants to be with him all the way for, you know, for attraction. And they obviously have a pretty serious commitment to one another. But there's also just a part of her that's just committed to freedom, which I think ties into later where we see her at the end of this movie and sort of what, you know, what got her from point A to point B once Han is a member of the Imperial Army.
You said a lot there. You really got me there, because what I was, I don't know. I need to think that one through.
I think their relationship at the beginning of this film and the way that they work together, again, clearly shows that they work well together. They melt, they blend well together. And Han's pure inspiration for leaving is so that he can come back and that he can save her. So I think in the next segment, well, let's talk a little bit about that. But I also want to talk about their relationship once they reunite with Dryden Voss. And so, Tom, what do you want to say about that? Because I know that one, there's some things there you wanted to talk about.
I think it's interesting. What I'm trying to wrap my brain around is what if it was the other way around? And it was Han that was captured and Kira made it through the gate. I'm not convinced that, would she come back for him? See, I'm not necessarily convinced of that.
You're very skeptical.
I think it's Han who is in love with her.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to paint a bad picture of Kira at all.
No, it's true.
I've always seen her more as, you know, the street smart girl who's really working, you know, whoever she can bring along, and clearly she has feelings for Han. I don't deny that. But I'm also not sure that, because of what we know about her throughout the movie, is that that's what she would have done. But I have no doubt. I mean, Han did. I mean, or would, you know, was that's what his goals were. But
I might be misunderstanding you, but my belief is that it's not that Han is the person that happens to be there, it's that it's actually him. Like, I don't believe that she would waste her time with anyone else per se. I think there's genuine affection and chemistry between the two of them there, which is why I think the end of this film ends the way that it does, with the ambiguity, because that of that deep affection and admiration for him. I mean, let's face it, Han is a very lovable buffoon in a lot of this movie, but that's part of the charm. And I think that with anyone else, she probably wouldn't even give it a second look. But because it's him, and I think that that is where the connection is. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, I don't think there's anything disingenuous about her at all when it comes to Han Solo.
Okay. I like the way that you put that. That sort of clarifies and makes me think, because what you said about him being the lovable buffoon, that's kind of what I was getting at with him and the land speeder getting caught, and she gives right. him that look like, goofball, we've been here before, but now we're being chased by someone shooting blasters at us. And so.
Huh. See, I thought that look was more like, oh, we got to get out of here. Like, oh, this is just something that happens in our lives. It's not, oh, geez, he did it again. It's more like, oh, this is happening to us again. Because I don't feel like she gets any better luck.
Well, doesn't she question him before he goes into it?
Well, yeah, of course. But that's just a normal human reaction, not more like you dolt. It's more like, oh, this is going to be risky. This is going to be scary. But she's impressed with what he gets from this, you know, that he has that kind of speeder, that he's got the coaxium. And I don't know. What do you think, Jay?
Well, you know, I'm sitting here listening to both of you, and you both bring up excellent points about Kira's personality and her relationship with Han and how everything kind of pans out. And I'm sitting here thinking, and this is one of the reasons why I love talking to you guys and other fans about all of these topics, is because it really does make you think, and it really does make you consider different aspects of things. But one of the things that I feel like, especially after reading the book, is that, you know, Han definitely was enamored with Kira from the get-go. And Kira kind of always felt like he was more annoying than anything and kind of stood in her way more than anything. And again, without kind of giving away too much, but of course I do feel that she had some real feelings for him. But you know, I feel like too that Han, even though he tries to act like he's Mr. Big and Baddie, you know, she always says, I know who you really are, where he tends to show his emotions on his sleeve a little bit more, even though he hates to admit it, where I feel like Kira's a little bit better at hiding what's going on underneath the surface.
Oh yeah.
Where she can, you know, she can do what she needs to do. And, you know, maybe she really did care for Han a lot more deeply than even we realize. And, you know, that's of course going to bring us to a different conversation towards the end of the movie. But I do kind of wonder, Tom, and that's a great question, if the tables were turned and she would have gotten through, you know, what would have happened in those 3 years? So yeah, there's a lot to think about.
Sure. Yeah, it's really, really hard to say, because we don't know where she was, I mean, how she got from,
exactly, you
know, being captured again by Moloch and then ending up with, you know, being basically the consigliere for, you know, Dryden Vos.
Right.
So it's hard to say.
And again, yeah, without giving too much away from the book, I feel like she did get a little taste of what it would be like to be offered more than just being a scrum rat. And so maybe those, you know, attraction to what else can I get is maybe almost an addiction for her in a way. You know, I hate to say addiction, but you know what I'm saying in terms of there's so much more out there and it can be mine.
I think she's in sort of a loop within herself, and I think she's very aware of that. But this is what she's always had to do to survive. The thing about her relationship with Han, this is what I think about the two of them. I think when they're on Corellia and they're, what, 19 years old, right? They're 19, I'm pretty sure, at the beginning of this movie. Mm-hmm. They have this, you know, relationship, but it's very immature because they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. I think when we see her later and she's at Dryden's boss's ship, I think she's mature. And I don't think that Han is when it comes to relationships. In fact, I don't think he matures at all relationship wise by the end of the film, which is why he's so sort of like, you know, a little bit like uncertain as to what's going on when she leaves. But she is not, it's not that she's moved past him, but she's in a different place intellectually and emotionally. And in her rise to power, probably, I mean, now obviously Han was, you know, in war, but he seems very much in control of his situation as best as he can be. With Kira, it's probably unlikely, considering she's been within the underworld. You know, at least the Empire for Han is trying to pass itself off as doing something for the greater good, even though he calls that frequently, calls them out for that. I just think that she's matured. And while when they're back, I think for the both of them, it's puppy love, and she knows it and he doesn't.
Mm. Well, you definitely get the feeling that she's very multi-worldly when they meet up again. And I always felt that Han saw the Empire as just simply a means to an end. He wanted to be a pilot.
Yeah.
And he wanted to, you know, travel the galaxy. So whether he was in it for the cause or whether he was in it as a means to an end to get a ship of his own and get back to Kira, I mean, I feel like that was still his main motivation, where, you know, Kira might have seen the means to the ends as, again, just a means of survival. And you could tell that she gained all of these different skills, like learning Taras Kasi and learning all of this entertaining skill from Dryden Voss and being very diplomatic and, you know, being very political and that type of thing. And these are just all things that she was gathering as part of her skill set.
Oh, that's so well said. And I feel like, on the yacht when they first reunite, I feel like she's in on the secret, mm-hmm. and she's in on like what, and he's just sort of like, hey, you know, and he puffs his chest and he's like, that puppy love comes back. But I do even feel like she breaks out of that sometimes.
Oh yeah.
And she, you know, and she like, she, you know, wants that back, but then she's always
crush.
Pulled back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's like the high school reunion.
I just feel like, yeah. And she's seen so much high school reunion.
It really is. It is, but, in a way. But he's like kind of like the stereotypical jock who hasn't, he's still sort of in that place, and she's not, because she's, you know, I can't imagine what it'd be like to work for someone like Dryden Voss, but it's obviously, she obviously terrifies him, or I'm sorry, he obviously is terrifying to her, but more from a place of respect than it is a place of fear, if that makes sense. She's not afraid of him, but she's also very aware that he's dangerous, and it would be, and would be silly to not even acknowledge that at all. All right. Well,
I love that.
This is why when I saw this film for the first time, and we were at the after party and we were talking about this movie, I kept saying to people, she's the most interesting character in this movie. I think she's so important. And, you know, Tom, you know, as a father of two daughters, I mean, I remember when we left the movie, when it came out on the 25th, talking about what she means to your daughter, right? Because why is she important? Why do you think she's important to young girls, or to people in general, young girls and boys?
I think that to my daughter, it's her independence. It's her ability to stand up for herself. Now, again, we don't know the layers behind all of that, but on screen, she's powerful. She's tough. And you know, she shows compassion for Han. You know, at the end of the movie, she plays along with the trick. And so, you know, she knows how to, what's the word? I collaborate. I don't know. And, you know, to play the ruse. And so I think it's all of those things that my daughter was drawn to her. I mean, besides the, you know, she loved her costume. She loved the long black dress. You know, she talks about that. She loves the ponytail. She loves her look. But on top of all of that, it's the toughness. And I asked my daughter before I came, I said, is there anything you think I need to share about Kira tonight that I should talk about? And Jay, she knew I gave her the props that you being a fashion person and all that. Kaylee says to me, I think you need to mention when she walks off the Falcon on Kessel and she's got the cape.
Oh yeah.
She is so powerful. And I said, what is it that makes her so powerful? And she goes, oh, Dad, just did you look at her? and so she's a strong figure in this, you know, much like, you know, okay, in very different ways, but much like Rey, you know, is, and that was, that's, you know, that's my daughter's first love character in the Star Wars saga is Rey, and she loves Leia and she loves Ahsoka, but you know, Kira fits right along with those in that she's, you know, all the things I said, power, independence. She has the look that is feminine and strong all at the same time.
Mm.
She's a 5'2" little powerhouse, which I'm 5'2 as well. So short girls rule. Yes.
There you go. There's the tagline for the show. Pretty good. Well, let's go ahead and take another break. And when we come back, we'll look at the news. And then I think later in the show, we'll talk about the end. And when we see the big reveal, not necessarily of Maul per se, but more just about Kira and sort of what is going on with her. So yeah, let's take a break. And Tom will come back with the news. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Visit the Topps booth during San Diego Comic-Con and take your photo in a life-size Topps Star Wars trading card. Bring out your best Chewbacca, Lando, and Han impressions and pose with replica props from Solo, A Star Wars Story. Participants who visit the booth will be able to enter a free sweepstakes for a chance to win autographed memorabilia from the cast of Solo, A Star Wars Story. Swing by Topps booth in the Lucasfilm Pavilion for more information. I'm noticing more and more that wherever I go, I hear people talking about or see displays for Harry's razors, and that's because they are some of the best blades you're ever going to find. But what I love about Harry's is that it's convenient, the shave is tremendous, and I feel like I don't have to worry about any other things in the morning because my razor is always there because of their amazing subscription service. They stand by the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors is not an easy decision. So Harry's has created a trial offer for you. Claim yours by going to harrys.com/CWKFamily. Harry's delivers a close, comfortable shave at a fair price. Their founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. But they know how a great shave comes to great blades, made with sharp, durable steel that lasts, and that's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more a month. And they bring you a quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and they'll give you a full refund. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, a weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blades, rich lathering shave gel, and the travel blade cover. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/CWKFamily. Make sure you go to harrys.com/CWKFamily to redeem your offer. Let them know I sent you to help support this show.
It's news time, and Tom, what do you got going on? Usually we talk about, you and I sort of banter back and forth about what stories we're going to do or what we're going to try to avoid and stick for either the show or for something else, but I legitimately have no idea what you're going to talk about, so let's have it, sir.
Right? This is going to be good, I think. I hope so. Well, it has been revealed this week what the layout for the Star Wars hotel will be and how it will be connected to Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Unofficially, filed by the South Florida
Water Management District show that visitors will drive from the parking lot at Hollywood Studios over the drainage canal to the front of the hotel. Now, according to Walt Disney News Today, there appears to be limited on-site parking, so it seems that the hotel will be using valet parking. Then, from the hotel, guests will walk on a pathway that will place them into the park between the Millennium Falcon and the Battle Escape attractions. You can examine the blueprints yourselves, and a marked overhead photo of the area are available to view on Walt Disney News Today website, or you can head on over to the Coffee with Kenobi website to check out those maps as well.
Okay, very interesting. Well, I apologize for interrupting you because you're on such a roll, but I do want to point out that this is unofficial. Disney has not come out with a press release or done anything on their blog like they normally do for announcements like this. That being said, WDW News is a pretty reputable site, and they usually have some inside scoops, and it all stands to reason. We'll check in with Jim Hill later to see, you know, more about this, because I'm sure he's got even more to tell us. But we do know from last show that the hotel is going to be open a lot later than Galaxy's Edge opens, because there's more that needs to be done. But it does go along with this theme that I don't think they want a ton of cars there anyway, because it will ruin the atmospheric quality and to make you feel like you're at a galaxy far, far away.
Well, I am living vicariously through everyone else, because I've said I don't know if I'll ever get to Disney. It's a bucket list thing, and I don't know if I'll do it before I kick the bucket, but it would definitely be something to see for sure. But it's just a lot of things that I would love to do. And that's one of them, but I don't know if I'll ever get to do it.
Well, we will definitely try to make that happen because it's it's going to be pretty magical. I know that there's going to be some sort of a tram type of a thing that's going to take people from the hotel to Galaxy's Edge. And I don't know. There's so many moving parts in this. And Toy Story Land just opened up at Hollywood Studios. And I've been listening to a lot of reports about that. And it's just getting me more and more excited because if you're on the Slinky Dog roller coaster at Disney's Hollywood Studios, you can see the spires being built for Galaxy's Edge as well.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
That is exciting. Construction is good in that instance. Well, moving on to our next story, the 2018 Star Wars Fan Awards are coming. To celebrate the amazing creativity and love for the Star Wars galaxy by fans, StarWars.com and Lucasfilm announced this week that there are three main categories that fans can share their creations. The three main categories are videos, photos, and visual art. Each of the three categories has a list of subcategories in which fans may enter. We may submit material from July 18th to September 17th, and submissions will be judged by a Lucasfilm panel, and the Audience Choice Awards will be voted on by all of us, the fans. Winners will be announced on a special episode of the Star Wars Show. Fan voting will be from November 2nd to the 13th.
This is great. And in full disclosure, when I saw that they were doing this again, because they hadn't done anything like this for a while, and they certainly haven't done it on this scope, but the first thing I did was scan the categories, and I was hoping there would be a category for podcasts, but there isn't. I already had in my mind this huge campaign ready, but you know, next time.
Well, there is one for original costume design.
Yeah, I know you're audition.
Maybe because I have my take on my female steampunk C-3PO costume that I made.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
I don't know if I should or not. I need some positive reinforcement.
Let me help you. Yeah, of course you need to do it. What have you got to lose? You're talented. You did a great job. You made quite a splash at Celebration Anaheim. Then you'll win. Why won't you win? I really very much believe that is the kind of mindset you have to have. And I think you would be a very, very hard person to vote against.
Well, thanks, Dan. I seriously, truly appreciate that. And you know, I need that affirmation because it's the same thing that I tell my students, I'm sure you do too, about applying for scholarships. If you think that you're never going to win, you know, other people are thinking the same thing. So the pool might be smaller than you think. You never
know. Exactly. Yeah, I say very similar things. Well, of course you're going to win. Why won't you win? Just make something so compelling that no one can possibly imagine telling you no.
But even if the pool is large, yeah, I still think, knowing what I know about you, that you've got a great opportunity. That is so cool. I was just looking at this thinking, is there anything that me in videos, I'm not good at that. But the photos, I was like, I wonder if there's something there. I love the best family portrait.
I know, so that could be really fun.
There's some fun stuff you could do there. They also have they also have a category under photos for just funniest.
Nice.
What that means could be anything.
Yes, nice. I know. I wonder if there will be a scatological humor category. Yeah.
So that
means open. Fart jokes, by the way. Yeah, I wonder.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how I can maybe work my Chewbacca mask that I wore for Roar for Change. And we made Solo cups and Wookiee cookies in my childcare class. And oh my gosh, was that hilarious. So maybe I can enter in a couple different categories.
You
Who knows?
Should. Yeah, I'm telling you, that steampunk thing, that is a brilliant idea.
So cool. Awesome.
Thank you. I'll have to do it. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Tom. Yeah,
for sure. And then when you win, I want you to come on the show and tell about how excited you are.
Of course.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Well, let's get to our final story of the day. DK Publishing announced last week that it'll be releasing two new books that will be giving us a bit of the Jedi mind and a little bit of the dark side power. The first, titled Be More Yoda, Mindful Thinking from a Galaxy Far, Far Away, will offer anecdotes from Yoda's teachings. StarWars.com has some exclusive images of the pages and wisdom offered. Such wisdom as free your mind from distractions, live in the present, believe in your abilities. Oh, there you go. There you go, Jade. What else do you need now? Believe in your abilities.
I like Yoda.
Straight from Yoda.
And don't be afraid to fail are all given with film images and further analysis and inspiration by author Christian Blavelt, who also wrote Star Wars Made Easy. Now, if mindfulness isn't your jam, maybe a book titled Be More Vader is up your alley. Hmm. Also by Blavelt, in the same format as Be More Yoda, the Vader book subtitle is Assertive Thinking from the Dark Side. Now, don't worry. This is less Sith and more executive, with topics such as find a mentor. Don't bring problems, bring solutions. Present with confidence and refine your negotiation skills.
Whoa.
These two, I know, right?
I guess I am a little balanced. If that's
Well, these two books look practical and fun to read, but I'm sure they'll definitely have targeted audiences. An exclusive look at both books is available on StarWars.com, and they will hit the shelves just in time for Star Wars Reads Month on October 2nd.
And nice. Christian is a great guy. He's been on the show a couple of times. I was hoping to meet him at Comic-Con, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think he's going to be able to make it this year. But he's a very talented writer, and he's all over the place for the BBC, and he's their deputy culture editor, and he's brilliant. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to read these.
Awesome. It sounds like it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, hey, Tom, thank you very much. But please stick around because we've got some more of a breakdown to discuss here from Solo, a Star Wars Story. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Take your photo in a life-size trading card at the Topps booth during San Diego Comic-Con. Enter for a chance to win autographed photos of the cast from Solo, a Star Wars Story at the Topps booth in the Lucasfilm Pavilion. Download Star Wars Card Trader for free today in the app and Google Play stores. One Nation Coffee is the official brew of coffee with Kenobi. Four lifelong friends had this idea that grew into some of the best coffee you'll ever have. I personally stand behind it. I think it's the absolute best coffee you can find in the galaxy. It smells amazing and tastes even better. Check out www.onenationcoffee.com to set up a coffee subscription and help your morning get started off the right way. When you're planning that trip to Walt Disney World or Disneyland, you know there are so many things that go into it. There are a lot of restaurants. How do I get fast passes? What ride should I go to first? Well, MEI and Mouse Fan Travel have you covered. They have signature service and expert advice to help clients maximize their vacation time and dollar. They help you plan everything from the theme parks and the cruise lines. And even more, they have invaluable tips, as I mentioned, and the entire service is free, and they get you a nice discounted price. Check out www.mousefantravel.com and get your Walt Disney World vacation started off today.
Okay, as we predicted at the top of the show, Kira is someone that we can definitely talk about through the entire episode. And as we're in our last segment, and there's still quite a bit more to traverse when it comes to her, and to me, I think it just seems natural to talk about the end. There's a sense of betrayal everywhere, what the thing with Beckett and him turning on everyone and all that stuff. And this isn't the Beckett conversation. We could talk about him later. I don't think he could last an entire show. Kira, however, does. What are both of your impressions of what happens at the end with her? And not only, I mean, defeating Dryden, sure, we could talk about that. I don't think that's there's as much there besides the fact that she's awesome and amazing and she kicked his butt, which is awesome. But what about the dynamic between her and Han?
That's a really good one. And, you know, Tom, I'm still thinking about what you said in terms of what your daughter shared with you and why she loves Kira so much and her comparison to Rey in that they were both survivors. And I do truly feel that. But I also feel like, and this might be, you know, kind of a hot space opinion here, but I feel like Rey always stayed true to who she was And there's kind of a certain sadness to Kira in that she never really broke free of slavery. I mean, you know, she in the end was still serving Maul and Crimson Dawn. And but yet there was also that, and to answer your question, Dan, and kind of segue into this, is I've had this conversation before. Was she doing this out of selfish persuasion, or was she doing this to actually protect Han? And I'd like to think that she was actually protecting Han, that she was giving herself up to take the focus off of him. And perhaps, you know, she was working behind the scenes, and that's why he was able to get away with so much that he was able to get away with, you know, over the years. So I don't know. I feel like she really did do it for Han and not just for herself.
Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't remember now. Go ahead, Dan. What happened there? I completely lost my mind. Go ahead.
I think because it's Han, I don't think she would necessarily stab anyone in the back because she's not evil. You know, she's a survivor. Tom, I don't know how you, if we took this as a Dungeons and Dragons character, would she be chaotic good? Or I don't really know how you'd qualify her. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of a thing? But but she is, she was looking out for him. I think she was willing to sacrifice herself at the beginning. Not necessarily sacrifice herself, but she wanted him to escape. She did not want him to come back and try to save her because he would have been killed. And she did not want that. And you could tell the sincerity there. Mm-hmm. You know, she says, thinking of you always made me smile. And she says that early in the film. And she brings it up at the end and actually tells us what she always thought. I think that was genuine. And mm-hmm. I think that her doing what she did, I think she was going to probably kill Dryden anyway. I'm sure that was part of her and Maul's plan. But I think she wanted Han to be away, and I think she wanted him to be safe. Now, what would happen when they were to encounter one another again? I don't know. I don't know that it would have come out quite as positively, but I don't think she wants anything other than for him to be happy and safe. I legitimately believe that, which is why she's so interesting. She's not all bad. You know, she's not all good per se because she's helping a criminal organization. But I think at her core, she's a good person.
And that look at the end that she gives when the light is just passing over her face, and you could just tell that depth of emotion that was in her eyes. And she just kind of, and she was thinking of him, but she wasn't smiling at that point. And there's just so much there that I want to know what's going through her mind at that point. Just so, so incredible.
Right. Because like I said, she's matured. She's realized that I don't have time for this kind of a stuff. Mm-hmm. Because she's trying to, I don't know what her ultimate end game is. Is she wants to run away and have some sort of like a nice little ranch on a distant planet where she can just be by herself and be at peace. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what she wanted. But I do still believe that she very much cares for Han. But again, the maturity thing is just so different between the two of them. The emotional maturity is what I'm talking about. And let's face it, emotionally, guys, we do mature a lot slower than women do. It's just a fact. It's a biological fact. And I think that's very much present in this film.
Yeah. And I have to say, this conversation has been so helpful to me because I don't know if you remember, Dan, in our review show, I had said in regards to Kira that I wasn't 100% sure that I loved her character in the movie, but I wasn't sure that I liked her character. And what I meant by that, and Jay, something you said is going to help me to like put a finger on what it I mean by that statement, and it is just that you said she's a sad, there's sadness to her character. And I feel like part of that, and Dan, you said earlier that I kind of have a cynical view of her. And I think that's where I get that from, is there's a sadness to her, and there's so much more depth to her that I want to know. But I'm not getting it here. And I feel like Han sort of whitewashes it and brings up the good parts of her life. And I think we're to see that in the movie. And we're to see that, you know, that Han is like, that puppy love, it makes her happy. But but that's not it. And gosh, I want so bad for there to be another story about Kieran. I hope it comes in whatever format it shows up in, but I want to so badly at some point be able to punch my fist into the air and say, go, Kira, and do it, and like be yourself. And I think that's what it is all about, is I don't really feel like we see who Kira really is.
But don't you think that's because she doesn't know who she really is? That's why there's so much conflict.
I think it goes back to what Jay says, and she never really breaks out of being that slave.
Yeah. And she's trying so much to.
Yes. And she's also, like I said, she holds her emotions very close to her. She's not one, like I said, Han, he more, you know, he shows his emotions on his sleeve a little bit more. Yeah. And I do feel too, and I want to know what the both of you think about this as well. And like I was saying before, she's kind of opened up a whole world of different opportunities. And there's been a lot of aha moments along the way. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that her encounter with Enfys Nest was an aha moment for her as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, here is this whole other cause that's out here. Here's the other side of the coin, so to speak. Who am I serving, and what is this actually doing for the galaxy and to the galaxy? And here's this other group of people out here. So just when they're standing there together on Savarine, it just really hit me that, okay, how did Enfys Nest really impact her? What do you guys think?
Oh, I think that's really smart. I hadn't thought about that, but they really are like foils for one another. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that she's inspired by this person who could very easily be her. Mm-hmm. Could very easily be Kira. You know, it could have been a very, very similar path that they had taken. And had the roles been reversed, maybe Enfys Nest would have turned out like Kira. But again, that's hard to say as well, because I believe the Enfys Nest we see at the end of this film is not the one that we saw at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. But Kira didn't see that particular character either. She just sees this powerhouse, this force of nature who is doing these things for good to actually better the galaxy. Whereas Kira is, as far as we can tell, is working, getting her hands dirty so she can kind of get away for herself. But she's not doing it necessarily for altruistic reasons like helping the galaxy or starting a rebellion, but more for the opportunity to get away from feeling like she is a slave, because she still very much is indebted to criminal organizations, like you said, Jay.
Yeah.
Tom, what do you think?
I love that. Yeah, I love your observation on that, because who wasn't inspired by Enfys Nest when she removes her helmet and shares her story? You know, and you might say, well, none of them really joined them. But, you know, I think it's what softens Han up.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or, you know, for when he encounters the rebellion and helps Leia escape. And I think that, you know, I think if you want to look at, you know, what impacts what, I think that's a huge step for Han. Because he wants to be the bad guy. He says so, you know, but he's the nicest guy in the world. But so there's that.
Well, Mr. Rogers is the nicest guy in the world. I don't know.
Well, that would be a hard argument to win. I think you might be right. But anyway, so yeah, I think Kira seeing Enfys Nest would have been a big motivator for her. But I keep going back to she leaves them all, and I get it. You know, how do you walk away from influence of Maul?
Yeah, but exactly. If she stays, for one thing, Maul will come after them. I don't think Solo's going to survive that. I mean, really?
No, you wouldn't. No, I mean,
she has more. She didn't expect to run into Han, so she obviously has an end game in mind, which we don't know what that is. So she's not going to. You know, we hear earlier in the film, you know, don't abandon the plan. You know, don't improvise. She's not improvising. She's still part of the plan.
Wow. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about her encounter with L3 on the Millennium Falcon?
I was trying to replay that conversation in my head, and I don't have enough pieces of it. But I love that.
I'm so glad you brought it up. Unfortunately. Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Oh, damn.
Go ahead, Jay. Yeah.
Well, what I love about it is that L3 is just like, okay, you know, let's talk about this here. This is just so obvious. And, you know, Kira's like, what? So, you know, it's almost like L3 is one of the few beings that exist that can really pull back that curtain and see maybe what's going on inside with her. And, you know, and it's almost like Kira in a way was, again, here's an aha moment for her, is like, oh my gosh, maybe, you know, maybe is she right? Am I giving away too much? And then I think that almost makes her revert into her shell again, even further, like, oh, you know, my feelings are coming back to the surface for Han. And we had that moment in Lando's cloak closet, which, you know, we could talk about that too, but you know what I'm saying? It's almost like, yeah, she's like, oh gosh, okay, I got to pull back again. I'm getting a little bit too carried away with my feelings, and I need to close up my shell. That's what I got from that.
I think that's interesting. I still think this is just the first crush puppy love. So of course you're going to get those flesh moments because the attraction is still there. That doesn't necessarily go away. But I don't think that she peels back the curtain of who she actually is at the interior of her core, but more of a, oh golly, aw shucks, I have a crush on Han Solo still. But I don't think that necessarily reveals what her end game is or what her true purpose is. It's just, she's still human. She's still flawed. Right. And that makes her more interesting and fleshed out. But other than that, I don't think it's a regression. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. Now I just feel like, you know, maybe it was one of those things where it was like, okay, I'm letting my guard down. I can't do this.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like
she's more evolved than a lot of characters in Star Wars, honestly, in any of the movies. She really is. Kira.
Yeah. I don't know. I go back to what else has Kira had other than Han's puppy love? I mean,
exactly.
And so is this an adult conversation? Is this a growth moment for Kira, coming of age moment, having this, you know, this conversation with L3 about relationships, and, you know, and then L3 goes into, you know, Lando and, you know, this, you know, this kind of weird conversation, but.
Oh, it works.
Is there more? Yeah. I mean, like is it like the best friend conversation you have? That's that you just learn about the world.
It's just girls. You just girl talk.
It's girl talk.
It's what she says. It's just us. Mm-hmm. And there is some fondness there and some charm to that scene. But
well, one thing that I wanted to mention, though, is the fact that I appreciate the fact that we don't know everything about Kira. And I think that there's so much out there right now that everyone is just trying to gobble up every single moment of every single backstory so that we have all of these pieces that are just neatly fit together. And then here's Kira that's almost like, in some ways, like Boba Fett was. You know, he had, what, three lines, five lines in the original trilogy, and everyone was completely enamored by him. Mm. So here's Kira with this, you know, not so filled in backstory. And I think it's exciting.
I do too. And that's what I was getting at when, you know, I want more of Kira, and I want to know more about Crimson Dawn, and I want to know more about Maul's involvement in this. And I like the idea that Kira probably was going to kill Dryden Vos anyway, at some point. And you know, the opportunity came because he had so much trust in her. That, you know, Han stumbling back into her life gave her that opportunity. And so, yeah, I'm so intrigued by this character. And yeah, I agree. It's almost more by what I don't know about her than what I do know about her.
Right. And in those little pratfalls in moments where she lets her guard down a little bit and then it brings it back in, but does it without any sort of a sense of internal conflict. I mean, she obviously has internal conflict, but it's not being expressed physically on her face. She doesn't seem to be in pain or anguish. I feel like she's just got a mission and she's carrying it out. She doesn't ever want to feel like a slave again, like she did on Corellia. And this is her escaping from that. And she may be constantly escaping from that. We don't know. But excellent, excellent conversation. Let's go ahead and take our last break. When we come back, I will read some of your emails and we will close out the show. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, Topps Digital, One Nation Coffee, Harry's Razors, and Mouse Fan Travel. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archive shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, Spreaker, Overcast, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, or our website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and we'd love for you to check us out there. Also, be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows, including Legends Library, Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia. Please leave a review for each of their shows as well, and be sure to subscribe to each of them individually, as they all have their own feeds now. From Tim Bungeroth, Dan, I've been busy, but I just got a chance to listen to your Lando show and the show notes. So glad to hear that my email, in its entirety no less, and to contribute to such a great discussion on your show. Also glad to hear about your brother loving Solo too. On the Sabacc game, I like to mention Han says, "Fair and square, baby," when he wins, which echoes his line in The Empire Strikes Back, "You lost her to me fair and square," which I thought was a great callback. Lastly, I'm going to the Chicago Symphony Orchestra tonight to see them play the score of Star Wars to the film. I'll see if I can get some pictures of the event. Go Cubbies, Tim. Well, Tim, thank you so much, and go Cubbies indeed. They have been on a tear lately. It's been wonderful to see. And please send in a review of your experiences at the Chicago Symphony. That's going to be fantastic. Man, I hope they do something like that again because I'd love to be a part of it. Tim, thank you so much for your email.
A big thank you to Tom Gross and Jay Krebs for joining us today. Where can listeners reach out to each of you and find your Star Wars conversation and inspiration?
Well, for me, you can always find me right here on Coffee with Kenobi with my Core Worlds Couture fashion review blogs, and I promise to have some new ones coming out here soon for the summer. I've got several products in store, no pun intended, and so you can be looking for those soon, as well as finding me on the RetroZap Network as a co-host for Starship Sabers and Scoundrels, which airs every other Tuesday.
And you can catch me on Twitter at Draftline and on Instagram at Cycling Librarian.
That's going to do it for show number 132 of Coffee with Kenobi. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We will be back next week with two new co-hosts and more Star Wars discussion. It will be our San Diego Comic-Con preview special with more insights into what you can expect from Coffee with Kenobi. We're going to have some tips and tricks. And I want you to let me know sometime in the next week what you want me to bring you from San Diego Comic-Con so you can feel like you are a part of that experience. This is a podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.